What is ADHD? What does that weird thing mean? How to know if I'm gay or not really okay? No thoughts left unsaid. We'll talk here instead. So come have a chat with Charlie.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Chatting with Charlie. We haven't had one for ages, so I'm really happy that I have time and energy to make one now. Today I'm going to be talking about my stay in the psych ward, sort of the good, the bad, the ugly, what does it look like, what have I learned, would I recommend it. I'm going to try and keep it as non-triggering as possible, but I do just want to speak out a trigger warning here at the beginning. I will be talking about mental health and mental illness. There'll be some mentions of some maybe heavier topics, such as self-harm, different diagnoses, eating disorders, all of these things. So if any of that feels uncomfortable for you, I would ask you to maybe skip this episode. So, I haven't been podcasting for a while because I've spent the past 2 months in a psychiatric hospital. And I saw a very interesting TikTok not that long ago, actually, about the terminology. And, you know, it said, you're not in a psych ward, you're not in a mental hospital, all of these things. You're in a psychiatric ward of a hospital or of a psychiatric hospital. And I think it's interesting the way we talk about these things, and I do think it matters because I think there is a lot of stigma around being in a psychiatric hospital or in a psych ward. Sorry, my cat's in the background. And I faced a lot of these. I have faced some of these stigmas from people who have heard about my journey. But I also had lots of internalized biases, which is why I want to talk about it, because, you know, if you go to the hospital with a broken leg, they'll treat you and no one sort of has any doubts about what happens or what it's like. But with, in hospital for mental health mental illness, I think there are a lot of people who don't really know what is going on. And this is something that I'd like to change, because I had no clue what was going on and what it was going to be like, you know, before I was in hospital. And I think, like many people, sort of my knowledge came from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and The Bell Jar and sort of similar media. And I think lots of the knowledge that I had was very, very outdated. Or I know that a lot of the knowledge was outdated. And I do want to maybe start by saying I've had a mostly positive experience. And I know definitely not everyone has. It varies by hospital, by ward, by country. And I know that there are definitely hospitals and places where abuse still happens, where unfortunately abuse of mentally ill people is still something very, very common. And I don't want to take away from other people's experiences who've had experiences who aren't this great, and obviously I can't promise anything. I just think that's important to say, but I do want to show that there are people who have positive experiences and positive times at hospital, and I think that's just something that's really important. So why am I there? That's probably one of the most interesting questions for many people, and I think it's not that important why I'm there, but I have several mental illnesses and I became, you know, more and more ill. It's been happening over the past 10 or so years. It just got worse and worse, and then it just peaked around last semester, and I was feeling very, very unwell. So I went to my psychiatrist and we figured out what could I do. And he said he'd like me to go to hospital. And when he told me I have to go to hospital, you know, that sort of triggered a whole other breakdown for me, because I felt embarrassed, I felt scared, I had all of these unknown feelings. And, you know, I looked at, I looked up hospital stays and I couldn't really find anything, and I couldn't find anything realistic, and I didn't know what would I be allowed to do and what would I be allowed to bring, and all of these questions. And when I then phoned hospital, they didn't send me a packing list, which was rather difficult because I had no clue, you know, is half of my stuff going to be taken away? And so it was all very, very difficult, and I really didn't want to start this journey. I didn't want to embark on this journey. I didn't want to go to hospital. I was scared. I was angry. I was sad. I went through all of the emotions regarding being there. So I'm going to go through it chronologically. I think that's the easiest way to go. But I'd like to just stop briefly before I got to hospital. So my last week at home, I suddenly had a hell of a lot of imposter syndrome, and I thought, well, I'm not ill enough for this, and I don't deserve it, and I don't need it, and I'm fine. And I think these are feelings that a lot of people have. And I just want to remind you that you are super valid in your identities, but also in your needing help. And needing help and accepting this help and getting this help is really important. And you deserve it. So I knew I was going to be going to hospital. It was a planned stay for me, because obviously there are different types of hospital as well. So for my journey, it's important for this podcast episode really that we know it was a planned stay, and that's why it was a psychotherapy ward rather than like a closed ward or whatever. And the thing with the psychotherapy ward is that you have more freedoms than you would have in other types of, in other types of hospital or different settings. And also I'm located in Austria, in case that's, of importance, because it's different. You know, I think this is quite a unique concept. At least there aren't very many hospitals like this in Austria. I'm not honestly sure about other countries, but so I knew I was going to stay here for 3 months. It was planned before in advance how long I was going to be staying, and I knew it was going to be for 3 months. And how the hell do you pack for 3 months if you don't know if there's a washing machine, if you don't know any details? So the hospital could have done a better job providing these details, in my opinion. But I'm here packing and thinking back about my journey so far, because you don't just go to the psychiatrist and decide, right, you're going to hospital. No, you had to phone this hospital, and then they would give you an appointment for a personal chat with a doctor. And then after that, you would be admitted. And there was quite a long time span between all of this, because waiting lists are super long. You have to power through for quite a while on your own. And I had the trouble that I am terrified of phone calls. So I did not call this hospital for a very long time. I wasted months that I could have got help because I was too scared to phone them. which is difficult. But I did it in the end, and I phoned them, and it all led me to the point where I was packing. And I massively overpacked, but also I'm me, and I wouldn't be me if I weren't somewhat quirky, and I didn't know what type of luggage other people would have. So I said, what if other people don't have a suitcase? I'm not bringing a suitcase. I'm not packing in a suitcase. So I packed in, I think it was five different bags. I had different things from shopping bags to a small hand luggage suitcase, a carpet bag, my rucksack, and some other sort of just paper bag. So I come with all of my stuff, and then I see, to my dismay, how much stuff other people have. And I was like, oh dear, I have massively overpacked. I brought, the majority of my clothes, and I brought, what else did I bring? I brought 10 books and some jewelry and makeup and. I was pretending like I was not in a hospital. I was packing the way I would as if I went on holiday, which I probably wouldn't recommend. I would probably recommend sort of thinking through what am I actually gonna need in hospital. And then, I was missing a hell of a lot of things that I could have needed. But I was lucky that Anya was able to bring me stuff. But what I did pack that felt very nice was some comfort items. I brought some pictures to hang up. I had a framed picture of my girlfriend and I. I had some, those pictures that you can take in like photo boxes. I can't think of the word, but Polaroid pictures, that kind of thing to hang up. I brought a stuffed animal that gives me comfort. What else did I bring? I didn't bring a blanket, but we were allowed our own blankets. And one of the first things I asked Anya to bring me was my soft, cuddly blanket because I just wanted to feel as comfortable as possible. And that really helped me, particularly during the nights, to feel, yeah, to not feel as bad and to not be as scared. And then I arrived with all of my luggage, and no one could have cared less that I had more luggage than pretty much everyone else. And I was sent to my room to unpack, and my room was actually very nice. It all reminded me of a youth hostel. The whole ward reminds me of a youth hospital and a youth hospital, youth hostel. And the hospital that I'm staying in is it's built up of, I think, 25 or so pavilions. Pavilions? Pavilion? I can't think of the pronunciation. This is awkward. I think it's pavilions, each ward is its own little house thing. You get the gist. And it's really nice because there's lots of nature and we have a big garden and we're allowed out for walks and there's like a little pond and stuff, and so it's all very, very nice. And I found out that I was allowed to bring whatever I wanted, really, because I was scared that I would have to hand in my shoelaces and my phone and my sharp items and all sorts of stuff like that. But the only thing I actually had to hand in was all the medication I had at home. Because we're allowed to visit home after a few weeks, we're allowed to visit home during the weekend. And they just don't want you, obviously, for obvious reasons, to have all of your medication at home. So that was the one thing I did have to hand in. We're not allowed to have any medication on us. And then, depending on why you were there, what your problems were, some people had to hand in like sharp items if that became a problem. But all in all, I was allowed to keep my phone and my electronic devices, and I got to keep my stuff. So that was pretty pleasant. And then I met my roommates, and my first roommate was a girl. I'm not going to give you, don't worry, I'm not going to give you any details about why she was there or anything. But she was a girl who was very different from me in sort of all aspects, really. Everything from politics and religion and Everything where we could have been different, really. It felt like we were different. And we got on like a house on fire. We got on so well, and we had such a nice time with each other. And she's already been discharged now, but it was wonderful. It was lovely. And that showed me very quickly, right, there are, because I was scared of the other people there, honestly. I mean, on the one hand, because I have social anxiety, but on the other hand, because I had these stupid stereotypes of what people in a psych ward were going to be like. Even though I was one of these people myself, and I'm not scared of myself, I was scared, well, not most of the time, I was scared of what would the other people be like, and what would their illness be like, and would I be able to handle it, and all that jazz. And then I very quickly saw, actually, you know, there are only other people, they are normal people like me, normal people who have problems like me. And it also showed me that sometimes it's good to just put your biases aside and also to put your difference aside and to focus on what you do have in common and to respect other people and just, I don't know, to be kind and to be open and to be welcoming and just everything like that. And on the first day, I thought I was going to get there and I was going to jump straight into therapy, which I didn't. The first 2 weeks consisted of mostly waiting around. We were handed out like schedules, and the first 2 weeks we didn't have any therapies. We started to have like information dates with the different therapists, but no therapy per se. So the first 2 weeks I was so bored. Like, I would never have thought that even though I felt so bad and everything, that my main emotion in a psych ward would be boredom, but it actually was. I spent a lot of time just sitting in my hospital bed, which probably wasn't the best for me because I'm a person who needs stimulation or else I die. No, but I need quite a lot of stimulation, and I need things to be happening or I just feel worse. But they wanted us, so they work a lot with mindfulness, and they wanted us just to have time to come down and get there and have, you know, be, have some time to actually relax, because we all come from very, very busy lives, as don't we all in this society. But yes, exactly. And the schedule is the next thing that I wanted to talk about, because I think that's something that many people will find very interesting. So we have psychotherapy, music therapy, art therapy, occupational therapy, physiotherapy, and then there's a mindfulness workshop, a skills workshop, which is specifically for borderline skills, something I'll talk about in a minute. There is a chronic pain group, which is pain education, and then also physio, which is fairly interesting. I'll tell you some more about that. Then Jacobson Progressive Muscle Relaxation, which some of you may know. And for those who don't, it is what it sounds like. It's progressive muscle relaxation. So it's something that I can recommend again to everyone, even if you're healthy. It's quite, feels quite good to, you tense all of your muscle groups one by one, and then you let them loose and relax them and see what it feels like, how it feels. And I think that's everything. Oh, and then there's yoga, 4 times a week in the morning. There is yoga right after waking up. Oh, and then there's Nordic walking, which it's a very Austrian thing, and it's sort of middle-aged and older Austrian, particularly women, but not just. And I made not a fuss, but I really didn't want to do this. I felt so stupid. But then it's actually really fun. You know, it's walking with those two sticks, and you can propel yourself forward. And it's actually quite good fun. So we have that as well, exactly. And that's what your days consist of. And then the afternoons are free, and we're allowed to leave the premises in the afternoons as well. So it's all pretty open. And the therapy is, I think most of them, it's kind of obvious what you do, but maybe it's not. So I'm gonna go through them one by one. So in art therapy, the therapist asks us how we're doing and if there's anything specific we need at the beginning, and then we draw or paint or well, it's pretty much drawing or painting, but there's watercolors and acrylics and gouache colors and all of these different things. And then you just get to be creative for half an hour, three quarters of an hour, and then you talk again at the end. What did it feel like? What did you need? What was difficult? What did you do well? All sort of stuff like that. Music is very similar, except apart from drawing, there's all sorts of different instruments that you can improvise on, or you can bring your own instrument. You can do some singing, you can listen to music. That's pretty much what music therapy is. Occupational therapy is quite cool, really, even though I was notorious for making a fuss about every time I had to do OT. But you can work with clay, you can bind books, you can work with like stone, with the hammer, where you make different shapes in the stone. You can do sewing, you can do mosaics. I think that's everything. And I'm working with clay, and I've made a super cool present for my girlfriend, and I wish I could tell you what it is, but she listens to this podcast, so hi, Anya. Unfortunately, I cannot tell you, but I've made some super cool things. I've made some mugs that have like animal heads. So I've made an elephant mug, and I've made a turtle mug. I've made the secret present. I've made some normal mugs. I've made a vase. Very good fun. But in my opinion, slightly pointless. I mean, like, I don't think it's pointless per se, but it's pointless for me. I wouldn't say that I've learned anything in OT. It just feels like having something to do, which is also important. Something to do that's also fairly relaxing is, it's still good, but I wouldn't say that it particularly helped me in my life. But what it has taught me is that I don't take enough breaks and when to take breaks, and also I've practiced sort of vocalizing my needs, which is also something that I was struggling with. So I guess it has taught me some things. And that's the same with all of these therapies. Maybe you ask yourself, why am I doing this? What's the point of this? But then there's things that you can learn that are sort of specific to the therapy that are then also sort of not as specific to the therapy, but actually very important for your entire life. Oh, and then there's obviously psychotherapy. I forgot to mention psychotherapy, which we also have once. Or no, I did mention it, didn't I? It was the first one I mentioned, which you have either once or twice a week, where I honestly wish it was more often. And then next to all of these therapies, there's always nurses who are on duty. And you have one nurse who is then like your specific nurse, and every time you see them, or once a week, or however you agree with them, you spend some time with like your specific nurse, and you talk about everything that's happening, that's going on, and how are you doing, and how can they help you, and what do you need, and all of this stuff. And then there's also medication. So that you're also treated with medication, where also once a week you go through, do you need anything new with your medication? Is there anything they can change? Do you feel like you need your dosage adjusted? Stuff like that. So you're very much part of the whole process, which is not something that's happening to you, but it's hard work. It's exhausting, but hopefully it's worth it. Then, so those were in physio. Most people sort of do exercises, and it's about staying active. But the physio said to me, she feels like I do enough sport as is, and she wants to focus on relaxation. So I sort of get massaged for half an hour once a week, which is also great. Then we've got the chronic pain group, which, as I said before, is education, and it's with the aim that apparently the more you know about pain, the less it can affect you. And that's why the hope is that for people with chronic pain, that with this education, the pain becomes less. And the last thing is the borderline skills group, which is definitely the most difficult, the most triggering, the most hard. So basically, skills are things that you can use when your tension becomes too high or when you want to self-harm. You can use these alternatively, or when your mood is very low. But there's like, they have specific skills where you then make a chain of these skills. So for example, for me, my chain would be putting peppermint oil like underneath your eyes, which really stings. The point of it is that it stings, that it makes you think about other things. Then eating a really, really spicy chili, sweet, or biting into a chili. And then ammonium, smelling it, like those smelling salts, which is disgusting. It feels dreadful. And it's supposed to help you when you have like super high tension. And in this borderline specific group, we talk about what can we do when we feel like our emotions are taking over, or when we are too stressed out, or all of these things. I mean, I think there are people without borderline in this group as well, but it's this skill training comes from the borderline, borderline treatment from behavioral therapy. And it's by far the most difficult because we talk about topics like self-harm, and we talk about alcoholism and all of these things. And basically, so we have to scale how tense we are every day. And it's from 0 to 10. And you say that everything 7 and above is highly stressed. And that's sort of the point of no return, where bad things happen and where we lose control and where we can not work on ourselves and that. But it's just somewhere there is your point of no return. And that's the point where you should, use emergency skills, maybe take emergency medication. And that's why, so we keep an eye on where are we tension-wise or stress-wise. It's difficult to translate because, there are specific nuances, and I'm sure that in the behavioral therapy that it's not called, that they don't call it scaling tension, but it's probably, there's probably some other specific vocabulary. But again, here I'm not speaking as an expert, I'm speaking as a patient, so I hope you can forgive me. And why do I say we talk about the triggering things here and nowhere else? Well, we have something called a dirty talking, is prohibited to dirty talk, and dirty talking is not sexual, it's anything that could be triggering. And we've had a few arguments with staff because we were accused, or various people were accused of dirty talking, but it was just very normal conversations. And it says on the what you have to sign at the beginning that dirty talking is just suicidal and parasuicidal actions, but then some people see it more like broadly and other people more narrowly, and you can get kicked out basically for doing these things. So if you do it once, nothing's going to happen, but if you keep not abiding to the rules, then you can get kicked out. And I am going to talk about getting kicked out a bit later. I haven't been kicked out, but it is something that was on my mind the entire time, so it's something that I do want to talk about. And as saying you're not allowed to talk to the other patients, that leads me to the other patients. Everyone is great. I've found some friends for life, honestly. Everyone is amazing. But it can be very hard having so many people who are suffering so much, seeing all of your friends suffer and seeing people have breakdowns and panic attacks and all of this stuff. It can be very difficult and it's not fun. But as I said, I've made some friends that I'm sure I'll have for life, and that is a fabulous thing. One of my best mates there actually is like a 55-year-old man. He must be roughly that age. I don't know his exact age. But he's way older than me, and again, so different in most aspects. But we get on like father and daughter. It's amazing how quickly you can become so close to people, which obviously again then makes it difficult when you see that they're not doing so well. But it's really annoying because it shows what society's like. So I'm friends with this bloke and we've been told we're being watched intensely in that because people were making it sexual, which I can swear it definitely is not. It was, you know, as I say, more like father and daughter. But we were told that we're not good for each other because we're making the other person sad by being sad. And I thought, well, yes, that's what happens in life. But by not becoming friends, you just miss out on such incredible people and you miss out on support and people who truly understand what it's like to be this ill and to be in this situation. And so that's what my stay looked like most of the days. I unfortunately became very scared of my flat and I couldn't go home for the first 6 weeks. And you're supposed to go home though. They want you to go home. They want you to remember what it's like to be, what it's like to have your normal life. And my nurse that I was talking about before, she actually came with me to my flat. So that was a bit of a weird situation, but also very, very helpful. And she's great and really, really nice. And that helped me be able to get back. So I've not actually finished my stay. I've still got another month to go. But today is one of those days where I'm allowed to sleep at home, which is very nice because I missed home, missed Anya, missed the cats. But I did have 1 week that was very different to the rest of it because there was 1 week where I felt really, really bad and they felt like they couldn't help me anymore. So I was transferred to the acute ward. And the acute ward is slightly different and the stay was slightly different. I didn't have anywhere near as many therapies. The rooms had video cameras in them, so we were watched more closely. But, and I think this is an Austria specific thing, I was still allowed to keep my phone and I was still allowed to like keep shoelaces and stuff like that that could be technically used to hurt yourself. But yeah, in an Austria-specific setting, I got to keep my phone, which was good because it gave me something to do. And I was very, very heavily medicated that week. So I already take a fair amount of medication, but that week I was very, very heavily medicated and I can't remember much of it. And the same thing is true for the few days after. When I went back to my normal ward, I have massive memory loss, or memory gaps, which just shows you how careful you have to be with these things and why you shouldn't just randomly take medication. Because yeah, it's scary, honestly. I mean, it's a funny anecdote, but it is scary. I have a dress that suddenly appeared after I was in the acute ward. It appeared in my cupboard and I have no memory of getting it. I have no clue where I could have gotten it from. I don't know whose it is or why it's there. It's a very nice dress, but it's not even my size. And I'm sure that it's mine. I have this gut feeling that I know that it's mine, but I don't know where it came from. But it is a nice dress, so, you know, luckily it's just something funny like that that happened to me with my memory gaps. But it could have been could have been very different. And after this this week in the acute ward, I was sent on timeout because they had said that I was no longer able to profit from the therapies, that my stress levels were too high, that I was not working anymore, and I got sent on a timeout, which I'll tell you more about when I finished my stay. But it was very difficult for me because it felt like I was being kicked out, even though I wasn't. You know, I was just being sent home for a few days because they thought the home was better for me than the ward. But it felt like being kicked out, and I'm a real stickler for the rules, and it felt like I was being punished almost, and I felt like a naughty child. So that was very hard for me. But then when that week was over, I was allowed to come back, and I was assessed if they thought that it would be good for me, if it would be helpful, and they said they think it is. So I was allowed back, and honestly, I've been doing much better since that week. I don't know what happened, what's changed, but I'm feeling less anxious, I'm feeling not as depressed. So maybe it really was the best thing that I was at home. But now I'm really looking forward to when I'm being discharged. I've had enough now. I must be honest. I'm exhausted. The therapy, it all just feels like a massive amount of work, which it is. It really is hard. I mean, it's already hard being ill, but I didn't think that it would be anywhere near this exhausting. I mean, like, compared to uni, it was much harder than studying, much harder than working. It's probably the hardest thing I've ever done, but it should help me getting better. And one last thing that I want to end with is, I feel like there really is hope. This was something that was shown to me the entire time. There is hope, and it can get better. And even though there have been many moments where I felt like it's never going to get better and I'm never going to be okay, slowly I'm feeling like actually there will be a day where I can say I'm okay. That was a rhyme that was not planned. And that was something that I just think is so beautiful, that there's lots of humour, people laugh, people are hopeful, and that was something that I felt the entire time, even though I kind of didn't feel it because I didn't feel hope. It was something that I noticed all around me. And then when you see other people getting better and becoming better, you know, that's the other side of making friends. It gets easier for them, and you can see them getting better, and that's just really beautiful. So I was really lucky that I'm having a pretty good stay most of the time. That most of the staff, I think, is fabulous. And yeah, if you need a hospital stay, don't be ashamed. There's nothing to be ashamed of. And I really wish everyone the best who is suffering, and also everyone who is not suffering. I wish everyone the best. And thank you very much for listening.
And now, as this episode reaches the end, I would like to share something with you that makes me incredibly happy. Who wants a sausage?